The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Are you unhappy with your health and catch everything doing the rounds? Do you have a mystery illness the doctors can't treat? Are you searching for a better way to manage your health? My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
Recovery Today on UKHealthRadio.com. Join me and my guests on this voyage of recovery and discovery.
Hello and welcome. My name's Jim Smith and welcome to Recovery Today. Okay, well, I hope everyone's all right out there, and this edition of Recovery Today, I've only got a couple left now, and this is number 22, I think. And I'm only doing 24 shows, so yeah, well, my guest today is Jack Barron, and Jack's going to introduce himself and tell you a little bit about his early beginnings, where he grew up and everything. So over to you, Jack.
Oh, yeah, thanks very much, Jim. My early beginnings. I wish I could remember them.
You grew up in Europe, didn't you? I remember.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. I was born in The Hague.
Yeah.
But my dad was in the British Army.
Right.
And we lived there for 6.5 weeks, apparently. Yeah. And during the first 11 years of my life, we mostly lived abroad. Mm-hmm. My dad came from Wandsworth.
Right.
And my mum came from Ham in Germany.
Right.
And they got married after the Second World War.
Mm.
They quite often got posted to Germany on several occasions.
Sure, yeah,
But I can't really remember growing up in England.
No.
Although apparently my kind of family were based in Southfields.
I know Southfields is near Wandsworth, isn't it?
Yeah, and
Garrett Lane, Southfields.
So we did spend a few months there.
Yeah.
In the kind of family house, but no, I was about 4 years old or something, so I don't really remember it.
Any siblings?
That's a bit complicated, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. I've got a half brother.
Yeah.
I've found out about the half brother on my 18th birthday.
Right. Yeah.
I'd essentially been out all night celebrating my birthday, taking drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I got back home. I'd gone and taken LSD. Mm-hmm. And I got back home and 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And my mum got up to make a cup of coffee or whatever. And she said, oh, well, you're back. I said, I'm fine. Mm. She said, all right, okay. She said, look, I'd just like to really wish you a happy birthday. I said, oh, that's great, thank you very much.
Mm.
And she said, I was going to save this up until you were 21.
Yes, yes.
However, I think I'll just tell you now. There's something that I've been keeping from you. And I said, well, what's that then? And she said, you've got a half-brother.
Yes.
I said, oh, really? And she didn't really say any more than that, but it didn't have any effect.
It didn't at the time.
No, at the time.
No.
But I subsequently met him a couple of times.
Mm.
Once he came over with his wife, and we met in near Flood Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Near Hind Street.
Near Hind Street,
Not far from Selfridges. And,
yes.
And we met in a hotel.
Mm.
So that was the first time I met him. I got on fine with him.
Yes.
Although I was more interested in drinking.
But
he was like at least 2 inches taller than me.
Mm.
And he... he was fit.
Mm.
He was a number of years older than me, but he was fit.
Yeah.
Because he owned a sports centre in Germany.
Oh, right, yes, yeah.
Funnily enough, I got on really well with his wife. His name was Guido, and his wife was called Margaret. So that was the first time I met them. As I just mentioned, I think I'll have another drink. I think I'll have another one.
You started drinking, what, in your teens, obviously?
A bit earlier than that. First time I can remember drinking. It was either, I think it was 5.5 years old.
Yeah.
And I was in Nairobi. And my dad was living, my dad had been posted there, and it was New Year's Day.
Yes.
And I woke up early, 6 o'clock or whatever. My parents were still slumped from the night before, having been celebrating. Mm. So I went with my local, there's a kid that I knew next door whose name I can't remember. Unfortunately, but we walked to the local army camp, which in my mind was like several miles away. It's probably like a quarter mile or whatever it was. But I knew the way there. I was like 5.5 years old, I think. And we walked in and just wandering around. There were no soldiers out. It's early in the morning on New Year's Day. One place I did recognise was the sergeant's mess, which had a bar, and I'd been in there with the dad. Me and the kind of kid from next door, we walked in there, and there were half-empty drinks all over the place. I thought, oh, look, Coca-Cola. I had one kind of taste of it. It tasted absolutely vile.
Yes. Yeah.
But I drank it all.
Yeah.
And I kept on drinking until I was found in front of the colonel's office. So there was a kind of a regimental gun. And I was found climbing over that by a soldier and taken back to my parents. But from that moment onwards, I knew that if I drank, it would change how I felt inside.
Sure, yeah.
And I liked it.
Yeah.
So,
did you like? Were you comfortable in your own skin, without alcohol? How did you?
Do you know what? I'm not really sure because it's a long time ago.
And you're obviously travelling about a lot growing up. You know, different places that your dad was posted at. But when did you kind of settle down? Did you? There must have come a time when, you stopped traveling with your parents and you left home or you settled down,
Sure. I mean, what happened was because we were traveling around.
Yeah.
It was decided that I should do exams and try and get into a boarding school.
Yeah.
In England. And in the end, I went to one. I got into one called King Edward's School in Whitley in Surrey.
Right, okay.
So I was dropped off in Fleet Street by my parents.
Yeah.
Got a coach from there down to Whitley.
Right.
Because the school had been set up by an Edward. I can't remember which Edward. King Edward the VI, actually.
Right, okay.
An Edward.
Edward.
Years and years earlier, hundreds of years earlier.
Yes, yeah.
And it was meant to be in part for poor people, poor kids.
Yes, there was a lot.
Going on. Yeah. So that's how I got in because I passed the exam.
Yeah.
So I was given a grant to get in.
Sure. Yeah.
I kind of got used to that, and then my kind of drinking accelerated a bit. And there were people with drugs.
Yes. Yeah. So you were there till you was 16 or maybe later?
You just coming up to 16.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember that, actually. Just coming up to 16. What happened was I got expelled in the lower sixth.
Yeah.
I was basically told by the deputy headmaster that I was being expelled for troublesome behaviour. It wasn't a particular thing.
Yeah.
But I had been slippered, which is like doing a great big plimsoll.
That's right.
Yeah. Week in, week out by the Ridley housemaster. I got expelled and then I ended up living with my parents in Letchworth in Hertfordshire.
Letchworth, yeah.
And then I kind of continued doing A levels at Hitchin College,
right,
which is the town
next to Letchworth. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And from there, I went to London School of Economics.
Yes,
and did a degree.
Yeah,
but thinking about my kind of using, really, I was using every day by that point. You know, I'd, for instance, the first time I had cocaine, I was in my first year at Hitchin College.
Yeah.
There used to be I forgot what it's called now, an interrail pass.
Yeah, that's right, interrail, yeah.
You go all over Europe for 40 quid or whatever 40, it was for a month, right, or 20 quid, I can't remember
the price.
And I got one of those and ended up in Amsterdam. It was probably about 16, coming up to 17.
And
in a place where they had bunk beds.
Yes.
And there was this American guy with long hair. And I thought, a proper hippie.
Yes.
And he just like, he had this package of white powder. And he just kind of, oi, would you like some of this?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, right. Thanks very much.
Cocaine, yeah.
So.
Well, I should imagine that time as well, you were, you know, listening to a lot of music, getting into music.
Sure.
Well, your first choice is, well, someone's familiar to me, although I've never seen him, but he was a singer-songwriter, Roy Harper.
Yeah, Roy Harper, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've seen him play, sorry, do you want to ask a question about him?
No, I mean, what, yeah, did you see him all those years ago? Did you?
I saw him a lot, I've seen him play a lot of times.
Yeah,
And I wish I'd interviewed him.
Yeah.
You know, it's nuts. But I worked as a music journalist for a long time afterwards. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But I saw him play a lot in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
And the particular track that I've kind of chosen, which is called When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease.
That's right, yeah.
I chose that because I knew I was going to choose something by Roy Harper. And I think it's... No, it's about death.
It's a bit, that's right.
And, I used to listen to Roy a lot when I was using.
Yeah.
And I listened to Roy a lot in recovery.
Yes.
And what I didn't know until probably about 2 months ago, if I'd been told, I'd completely forgotten.
Yeah.
Was my first sponsor.
Yes.
His name's Simon.
Yes.
His brother was a photographer who died early on, but he was a big friend of Roy Harper's.
Yeah, yeah.
And probably about 6 or 8 weeks ago, I was just sitting at home and I suddenly had a phone call from Simon. He said, "What are you up to?" I said, "It's just Sunday night." I said, "What are you up to?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I'm just kind of sitting here watching television." He said, "Well, do you want to come and see Roy Harper?"
Right,
I was like, "Really?"
Yeah.
So yeah. So I said, all right, okay. So it was at London Palladium. I went along.
And
what had actually happened, kind of ironically enough, is he'd been given a ticket by some German people.
Right.
Who thought that their dad was going to turn up. But their dad had kind of stayed in Germany. And so Simon passed the ticket on to me.
Right.
And one of the tracks that stuck in my head was Roy Harper playing When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease.
Okay, well, let's play that now, shall we? Here's Roy Harper with When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease.
When the day is done and the ball has spun in the umpire's pocket away, and all remains in the groundsman's pace for the rest of time and the day. There'll be one mad dog and his master pushing for four with the spin on a dusty pitch with 2 pounds 6 of willow wood in the sun when a of a 12th man at Cinnamon, and it could be Jeff, and it could be John, with a new ball sting in his tail, and it could be me, and it could be thee, and it could be the sting. And the clock turns back to reflect on the years of grace as those footsteps trace for the last time out of the act. Well, this way of life's recollection, the hallowed strip in the men and the noonday sun are much more than just yarns of the days when an old cricket leaves the crease. Well, you never know whether he's gone. Sometimes you catch an of a 12th man at sea.
and it could be me, and it could be thee, and it could be the sting in the end, the sting in the end.
When an old cricketer leaves the crease, well, you never know whether he's gone. If sometimes you catch in a fleeting glimpse of a twelfth man at silly mid-on, and it could be me, and it could be thee,
Well, that was Roy Harper, you know, marvellous singer-songwriter, really, who began in the 60s, and that was one of his classic tracks, wasn't it, Jack? Was it When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease? A great title, isn't it? About mortality.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll just say this for the listeners. A sponsor is somebody in recovery who's perhaps walked the path a little longer, had a bit more experience. It's a kind of mentor figure, isn't it, Jack?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and this guy got me to my first meeting, first kind of 12-step meeting in London.
Right. When was that, Jack?
That was in middle of 1991.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
I had been to one in Oxford in 1982.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just didn't work for me.
Just, you know, no,
because I heard the word God over and over again.
Yes,
and I was like a bit of an atheist.
Yes,
like, not for me. No thanks.
Yeah,
but Simon got me to the first meeting in London.
Yeah, yeah,
and basically helped me to get onto the program.
That's right.
Which happened at the end of 1994. So I spent a long time kind of drifting around.
Yeah.
Recovery for a week and then back using.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
So you came into recovery. You had your last drink and drug in 1994?
Yeah, the end of 94.
End of 94.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It took me a while to get there, though.
Mm. Well, it takes what it takes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's different for all of us, perhaps.
Sure.
But. Yeah. That's still a long time, isn't it? What's that? What, Shana, have you said?
24 years.
24 years, yeah. Of course, yeah.
It's,
And where was this? In London, where you began your recovery?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did have an attempt in Oxford.
Mm. Yeah.
But as I mentioned earlier on, but, you know,
that's right.
I went to one kind of meeting and that was it.
Yeah.
It was just like, no chance.
Yeah, well, the time wasn't right.
Sure, and also, at that point, I'd become a music journalist.
Mm. Mm.
So I was living this kind of rock and roll dream.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of journalism version of it.
Yes, yes.
Getting flown to different places around the world to interview musicians that I was interested in.
That sounds pretty,
And for the most part, it went really well. Although, publicists obviously knew, the guy's an alcoholic and drug addict.
Yeah.
We just need to, like, supply him with that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But for the moment, you know, I really enjoyed interviewing people.
Of course.
It only went really bad once.
Yeah, yeah.
I won't bother. So, but basically, one guy tried to beat me up. because at that point, he was going into rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been told that.
Yeah.
And by a photographer who was a friend of his.
Mm.
And the photographer said, I'm going to ask about that. Mm. It was going on the front cover of a music magazine.
Yeah.
I said, I don't do that, but I did.
Yeah.
And he really, the musician really lost the hump.
Yes.
Big time. And tried to kick me in the head. whilst I was getting out a tape, like the tape of the interview.
Oh, well, that's an experience I haven't had yet. And I hope it is a yet.
Right, yeah, yeah. It's
one of my interviewees tries to attack me. Still, I think I stand more of a chance not to be attacked because all my interviewees are sober.
Exactly.
So that's a good thing. But yeah, so did this journalistic part of your life, did it continue in recovery? Did you?
Yeah. Essentially what happened was I'd been trying from the middle of 91 till the end of 94 to kind of get properly sober.
Mm.
And I was, but as I mentioned earlier on, it'd be all right for a few days or a week or whatever it was. And then I'd just think, do you know what it is? It's because I was drinking red wine. Oh, do you know what it is? It's because, you know,
yeah, there's always, yeah.
Whatever it was. I just don't have the right combination. But then suddenly, you know, the guy who got me to my first meeting, I'd bump into him in Portobello or wherever and say, how are you getting on? I'd just say, well, you know. And my final day of using was, I phoned him up at like 1 o'clock in the morning. He answered the phone.
Yeah.
And he said, well, what's up? Like, I went, well, this has happened, that's happened, but I don't feel good. I think I might die if I use anymore.
Yeah.
And he just goes, well, you know what you need to do? I was like, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you've been to enough meetings, haven't you? I thought, yeah. He said, well, look, find a power that's greater than yourself. I was a bit like, you want me to pray to Jesus or this or that and the other? No. And he was just a bit like, well, it's up to you. You know, it can be the higher power of your understanding. So that's what I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of complete and utter desperation.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, I've been clean from that point.
That's right. And as you say, it can be, it's often misunderstood, isn't it? And people think it's a kind of quasi-religious thing. But, you know, G-O-D can be group of drunks, can be great outdoors, can be the universal spirit or whatever you conceive it to be, really. Yeah. Or he or she. Or I believe that anyway. I'm quite kind of... I'm not really rigid on that at all. I find the older I get, the less rigid I get around everything, which is, I like that, you know, it's kind of quite open-minded and free-thinking, I think. So your second choice, Jack, Regret by New Order, it takes you back to your days in treatment at Thurston.
Sure. Very much so. I mean, at that point, and this would be in 1995, I'd split up with my girlfriend. That's how I got, that's how I got clean. I got clean by stopping using. But I knew if I stayed in the relationship, I'd go back. So my heart was broken, essentially. Regret just seemed like a highly, highly appropriate song. I'd interviewed New Order before. And stupidly, this is for an American magazine called Spin, didn't actually write up the piece because low self-esteem kicked in. Even though I'd spoken to the editor, it's been, we'll have it. It's been like, oh no, if I do it, they won't use it.
Yeah.
Which is nutty.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's, you know,
we do suffer from that.
Yeah.
Low self-worth. Anyway, let's play them. Shall we? New Order, singing Regret. Okay, well, that was New Order with Regret. And yeah, you know, Kat, you were just telling me about the accident, this terrible accident you had, and you know, being run over by by a German guy, actually. I mean,
Mr. Schmidt.
Yeah, but and you were in hospital for a long, long time. Is that
three? Yeah, 3.5 months.
Yeah.
I can't remember anything for the first 5.5 weeks. Apparently, the people I know from recovery came in to see me.
Did they?
I can't remember any of this. No. I was just talking nonsense. And then I can remember the day when suddenly everything came together.
Really?
There was a nurse. I was in a room by myself. And there was a nurse. Kind of by the bed. I just said to her, what am I doing here? And she said, oh, look, you're run over.
Yes.
I said, was I?
Yes.
I said, yeah, and you were badly hurt. And she said, I said, all right, okay. I said, well, look, but, you know, so do you speak Italian then? I said to her, and she said, no, why? And I said, well, look, I presume that I'm in Florence. She said, well, what gives you that idea? I said, because I was planning to go on holiday to Florence. And she said, no, just look out the window. So I looked out the window and it looked very, very London-y.
Londonish.
And it was the Royal Free Hospital.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I noticed, there was this, that I couldn't see properly out of my right eye at all. That I had a catheter coming out of my stomach. A bag of urine on my leg.
Yes.
I was just like, what's this then? I've got to go to the loo. And of course, you don't. Really.
No.
And I was in there for the best part of just over 3 months after that.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Having the occasional operation.
I
tried to rejoin my urethra.
Yes, urethra.
And that failed.
Yeah.
And then I got MRSA.
Yes,
MRSA. I got that.
Yeah, did you?
So basically, I had then had my urethras operated on in a hospital just off Tottenham Court Road, the name of which I've now forgotten.
Yeah.
Two and a half years later, because I had MRSA. So 2.5 years of wandering around with a bag of urine on my leg.
Wow.
Wasn't fun, really.
No. Yeah, that's...
But whilst this was going on, what I did do was, you know, my local doctor, once I'd eventually got out of hospital, he offered me Tramadol.
Yes, yeah.
And I knew that would be bad news.
Yeah,
you know what I
mean? Yeah.
So I didn't really take them.
No. That's right.
And...
So in a sense, I mean, a few of my guests and, like, I identify with not the actual condition, the health condition, but it's almost as though you've had another recovery, recovery.
Yeah, exactly.
From all this, this traumatic incident.
Yeah.
So how's things now? And have you got some visions and plans for the future, Jack?
Well, I'm kind of getting on with it. Yeah. I don't want to be, but I am.
How old are you getting on a bit?
64.
Ah, 64. And,
And the one thing that I do regret is, like, I own my place. And that's the only... The one good thing was the guy who ran me over was insured.
Yes.
And that helped me to buy the place.
Good, yeah.
And I regret the fact that I didn't sell it a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And just, like, bought somewhere else and gone travelling.
Mm.
Because the last X number of years haven't been that good. And there's been a solution.
Yes, yes.
At hand.
Yeah.
You know, I've been writing up somebody's biography.
Yes, yeah.
Which has been on hold for a year.
Yeah, now.
And I'm writing a book about an Israeli band called Minimal Compact, a booklet for an album they've got coming out in November. Mm. There are bits and pieces going on, but, you know, the fact that I'm 64 and there's all sorts of places in the world that I haven't seen.
Well, maybe you will see them.
Exactly.
Maybe you will see them. This is your time. I don't think there's a set time when we do these things. I think that's been the variety of life has been the kind of focus of my recovery, you know. Right. You know, we grow up, don't we, in society with norms, and maybe we should do this at that age and all that. But I don't really go along with all that. We can do these things at any time, Jack. So you know, I wish you well for the future, and I hope you see some of these places. Well, I'm sure you will. And your last, we'll play out with your last selection of music. It's Public Image, isn't it? Do you want to just say a few things about this track?
Sure, yeah. It's a track called Rise by Public Image.
Yeah.
And Public Image, the singer in Public Image, and the guy who helped start the band, is called John Lydon.
Yeah.
And he was the singer in the Sex Pistols.
He was, yeah.
So I did think, oh, maybe I should pick Anarchy in the UK or something. Yeah. But I didn't. I picked Rise.
Yeah.
In part because of the lyrics.
Yes.
The lyrics, basically one of the lyrics is anger is an energy.
Yeah.
And may the road rise with you.
Right.
And the tune is really good. And it came out in 1986, I think.
Mm.
And I interviewed John Lydon at that point in Notting Hill.
Mm.
And I was... It was one of the times what I did is I swatted up a lot.
Mm, mm.
I read as much as possible, listened to as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was briefed.
Mm.
And I turned up, I was taken along to meet him by a PR, who I think was a journalist as well.
Mm.
You know, as we walked in the front door of the house, John Lydon came down the steps and Lydon did a massive belch and stuck his hand out.
Yeah.
I thought, do you know what? He's exactly as I imagined.
Yeah.
And he turned out to be really, really interesting to speak to.
Good, yeah.
And we got on really well.
Yeah.
The fact that he's now in favour of Brexit. Wow. That's just like...
yeah, well, you know, not all... Yeah, I know.
But, you know, May the Road Rise With You is like a good kind of theme tune.
Sure.
For, you know, for recovery for me.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point to end it on. And, yeah. Okay, Jack. Well, it's been good to know a little bit more about you and, you know, to wish you well, as I said just now, with these visions, you know, because there isn't a right or wrong time. The time is now. So let's play out with Public Image and Rise.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and join me next time. Here's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drinking problem. The number is 0800 917 7650. That's 0800 917 7650. The number of Narcotics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drug problem. That's from 10 a.m. till midnight. The number is 0300 999 1212. 0300 999 1212. And finally, Al-Anon, which is a fellowship to support family and friends of the alcoholic. It's from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The number is 0207 403 0888. That's 0207 403 0888.